Hey everybody, it's Paul Yeager. Welcome inside the MTOM studio. This is the MTOM podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. This week we are going to talk with Kelly Neuenhaus from Northwest Iowa. He is the outgoing chair, former chair of the Iowa Corn Promotion Board. That's different than the corn growers. We'll get into that discussion on what the two groups do. We're going to talk about the state of corn in the Hawkeye Corn State. We're going to talk a little bit here about sports and some of the opportunities he's had over time, his family operation, and weren't planning on it, but we ended up getting into that planning of succession. So lots of topics to cover here with our farmer and friend, Kelly Neuenhaus. Who'd have thought, Kelly, 8 years ago when you started on Iowa Corn that you would have access to all these great sporting events? Did you kind of know that? Was that why you did it? You wanted to be at a race and a football game and a basketball game?
You know, I really never even knew a whole lot about that part of it. But I've learned over the years what a great way to promote Iowa agriculture through these series, you know, between the Iowa Corn 300 that we used to have and now the Iowa Corn Cyhawk series. And the number of people you connect with around the world, it's just amazing. So.
Well, sometimes the promotion of your product isn't, I mean, yes, there's marketing to those that know it, but it sounds like the board is maybe taken more of an approach to those who don't know it or maybe are removed from it. Is that an accurate assessment of what's gone on?
No, absolutely. You know, we always talk about the number of consumers in Iowa being around 3 million, but nationwide it's 320 million. And so we do need to connect with people all over the U.S. and world because we are definitely in a world market on about everything we do here in Iowa as far as agriculture production. So it's pretty key to connect and put a face with our name when it comes to Iowa Corn and Iowa Corn Promotion Board.
Well, in Iowa, I don't know what it is. I mean, in the suburbs where I live and the people I work with live, they're not but one, maybe two generations removed from the farm. But how quickly you can forget or lose sight of what goes on the farm. So are you working to try to inform people like me as well?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're trying to connect with as many consumers as we possibly can. And, you know, we've even started to focus a lot more on the students and the educational part of it. You know, I've had several opportunities to visit with FFA chapters and 4-H kids and students in school. And so that connection is pretty critical because, like you said, so many people are getting further and further removed from agriculture. And, you know, even in the state of Iowa, only about 5% of our population are directly connected to farming. So, We're a minority in a state that's a leader in agriculture.
Which is probably not where you thought it would be 20 years ago, let alone 50 years ago.
No, you know, we really didn't, but that's kind of the way it's been going. Farms are getting bigger. You know, that's just part of it. You know, I have a family farm. I farm with two brothers and have another brother that has his own farming operation. But, yeah, we've covered more acres because I guess less and less people want to be directly involved in the production side, and I think a lot of it has to do with the risk that we need to take to be in this profession and, you know, the ability to be able to deal with that.
Even in your own family, I mean, you have a large family that, are any of them going to farm with you or after
actually,
you?
That's something, too, that none of our children are planning on joining our farming operation at this point. I guess I shouldn't say none. I've got a brother that has a son-in-law that I think is going to get involved with his part of it. Another brother that's got some grandsons that he hopes down the road will. Personally, I don't in my part of the farming operation, but I'm looking forward to working with some young operator here down the road in a few years and started my succession plan for the next generation on our farm operation.
So you have started that plan?
Yeah, we got something in place. You know, I'm 63 years old, been farming for 40 years, and I recognize that that's not something I'm going to do forever, so I want to have something put in place for the next generation to take it over.
Well, I wasn't planning to go there. Just want to divulge that just for a minute. why should someone who's 63, maybe even 53 or 73, have that conversation about a succession plan?
Well, my biggest thought is, you know, children are my four kids. They've grown up. They got good jobs. They've kind of spread out across the country. And, you know, even they're not as into farming as I am. So I want to be part of that process and make sure that if something would happen to me, you know, you never know when you could get hit by a bus or a health issue come up and all of a sudden you can't deal with this occupation. And I want to be kind of in control, or at least think I have a plan. You know, plans don't always happen the way they're supposed to, but working on trying to have a plan.
And that's, I've talked with farmers, maybe farmers in my own family, that they need to have some type of plan, and eventually they come around to it. It's not to signal that you're done, but it's just to put things there in case. I mean, when you said a bus, that's kind of funny you say that. We have a file at Market to Market called the lottery bus file. If one of us gets hit by a bus or wins the lottery, we pass on to someone else who has to fill in behind us what to do. And that's really what you're doing.
Yeah. You know, I always tell people this story. My father farmed for 60 years. He never retired. And my mother never wanted any of her sons to farm because she saw the struggles they had to go through to get to where they were. But, you know, after my father passed away, she was so thankful that we all farmed. So it was an easy transition. But I'm not going to be in that situation. So I'm trying to help my family out by having something put together before something happens. So.
Well, your family's trying to save the world, whether it's doctors, nurses, or whatever it is. I mean, you've got quite the educated lot there that spread across the country doing good works.
Yeah, they're all doing a good thing, and they're all doing what they love. So I guess that's the key to it. So.
Yeah. You're in the Primgar, Paulina area in northwest Iowa. How's the crop look this year?
You know, it actually looks surprisingly decent for the amount of rainfall we've had. But I have to be honest, I've got our farming operation stretches over about 20 miles from north to south. And my southern farms have probably only received about 2 inches of rain in the last 2 months. And my northern farms have probably pushing 8 to 10 inches. And so they're going to be really good, I think. My southern farms are going to be hurt a little bit, but I think overall we're going to have a pretty solid average in our farming operation here in northwest Iowa.
So what's that mean for the overall picture when you, even in your small, we'll call it neighborhood, that it can be so split? It sounds like, I mean, depends on who you believe, what's out there.
Yeah, we've seen it, you know, the last 2 years in a row in our area that it's been very variable. The rainfall patterns have followed the same paths the last 2 years. So, again, we're going to see yields all over the place. We're going to have farmers that are going to have crop insurance claims to the south of me, and we're going to have farmers to the north of me that might be producing a record crop. So,
and not a big spread.
In that 25-mile area.
So it makes it really hard to predict what's
out there. It is tough to predict. You know, we can look out our back door and see what we might have, but it's hard to predict as a nationwide crop is being produced where that's going to be.
Well, you know, there's these groups that go out there, these private estimates, and they do their estimate, and you've got other companies that do satellite imagery and things like that. How much do you talk about, well, I guess talked about, past tense, in your promotion board meetings?
Oh, we always, before every meeting, we have a crop survey from the board members around the table, and you know, we come from 9 districts in the state of Iowa, so we have the state covered pretty well. And then also, being on the National Corn Ethanol Committee, we go around that committee and have crop, updates. And I think this year was probably the first year I've been involved in Iowa corn or corn growers that I heard more negative thoughts towards their crop production than positive. So, to me, that might be a pretty good picture that we're going to be below trend line yields on corn and beans.
Hmm. Wow, that's unfortunate, because I think you said 8 years you've been going to these meetings.
Yeah, I jumped in with both feet in 2014 with the Iowa Corn Promotion Board, and I've always said it's probably one of the best decisions I ever made, was to get involved in this type of an organization. Just, I've been so impressed with the clout that the Iowa Corn Growers Association has, the management team, all the staff members, all the board of directors that are willing to give their time to be part of this advocacy promoting Iowa agriculture across the state and the nation. So I think it's pretty important to have a voice, and I do think membership matters, and having a stronger voice by being part of an organization.
So you're just coming off of corn promotion. Were you on the other board, or were you always just on the promotion side?
I've always just been on the Iowa Corn Promotion Board.
So then tell me the difference between the two, who might not understand.
Okay, the Iowa Corn Growers Association, they deal more with policy, legislation, lobbying, and those dollars come from membership dollars or memberships. The Iowa Corn Promotion Board, we work with the checkoff dollars. The 1 cent per bushel that farmers contribute to the Iowa Corn Checkoff helps us, work for expanding markets across the world. Promoting corn in all forms is key in today's world, because we got so many value-added products now through corn. Our research and development committee or team does some great work in finding new technologies or new uses for corn. Going forward, we work very hard to educate and inform consumers, farmers, and key decision makers on what we're doing in agriculture. And then another big thing is, we're working hard to protect and improve our land, and through water quality and natural resources.
But there is a little crossover on some of those topics for both, right? I mean, you mentioned water quality. I'm guessing both boards are into that environmental discussion.
Yeah, we have what we call joint board meetings. We're always in the same room for the most part. Every now and then we have a separate, just sit down and visit. But we've done this for several years, and we really like the way it works, because we always say this way, the left hand knows what the right hand's doing. And we're always involved in the discussions and figuring out what's the best way to move forward in promoting agriculture.
Who gets the better trips, though?
Well, we call them missions, I'd say it's pretty much some members of the Growers Association also do get to join the U.S. Grains Council or the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Actually, we got a member of the Iowa Corn Growers Association from Northwest Iowa, Dean Meyer, that will become president of the U.S. Meat Export Federation here shortly. And so we've got a lot of good influencers in the livestock industry, the biofuels industry, the new technologies with our great research team. And so I feel we're pretty well equally balanced. I've had some great opportunities. I've been to China on an ethanol trade mission. I've been to South Africa. And that was more talking about GMOs, because South Africa supports genetically modified organisms, and the rest of the continent of Africa, not so much. So we're trying to work together to promote GMOs in Africa. I've been to Colombia, and that was mainly an ethanol trade mission. And, Colombia is one of those countries that has a low carbon fuel standard. And to sell into their country, you need to qualify for like the California's low carbon fuel standard. And then just recently I was in Brazil, and that was a 4-person team with U.S. Grains Council, and it was strictly an ethanol trade mission. And, a few years ago, Brazil was our number one export market for U.S. ethanol. Then we had some tariffs put on the U.S. ethanol, so we went from like 500 million gallons down to 27 million gallons, and they just recently lifted those tariffs. So that was the big key to Iowa Corn Promotion Board and the U.S. Grains Council, heading to Brazil to open those talks up again and try to get back into that market.
Go back to Kelly from 8 years ago. How much did he know of that answer that he just gave?
Yeah, absolutely none. And I also wouldn't have been able to sit in front of this camera and do it, probably. So,
well, and I'm
hearing that message.
And I've talked to you in person, and I've talked to you, you know, this way now. And I'm always amazed at the groups, the trade groups, whether it's the corn, the soybeans, the wheat, the cattle, whatever. They do media training, and there's a good reason for it, because you're asked to be the front of the message. And I always think that's important, and you rotate through. Because you could easily have all that knowledge, Kelly, and do whatever mission it is you're going to do, but then nobody new gets to come in and tap into that. But now, we'll call it a disciple. You're going to be the guy out to pasture who still knows it and has discussions, and you can say to those who come behind you, well, hey, how are you coming on that issue? And you know about it.
You know, that's one thing I've really appreciated with Iowa Corn is the media training. And being able to be comfortable in front of a camera, in front of a crowd. You know, I never had public speaking when I was in high school. I should have. I totally recommend that to the FFA students I go visit with to take communications and take public speaking. Because you can have all the knowledge in the world, but if you can't express it, it really doesn't do you a lot of good. So that's been key. You know, we have it twice a year at Iowa Corn. And I know guys that have been involved for 30 years that still show up for those media trainings and always pick up a new pointer on what's the best way to share the messages. So I've been pretty excited about that opportunity. I always tell the younger members of our Iowa Corn Growers Association that they're drinking from the fire hose like I was 8 years ago. And trying to help them be a little more comfortable. That's something else I've seen improved over the last 8 years is trying to get new young leaders through iLead and the college advisory team that we have at Iowa Corn to help to put the people in place after they put me out to pasture.
And I meant that in the most friendly of ways. You do know that,
I've
right?
I've got one more year as chair. It's a lot less responsibilities than the year as president, but we'll steer in a committee at Iowa Corn, and I've been mainly focused on ethanol and the biofuels industry, I'll be honest with you, but that's why I'm so happy that we are such a diverse group at Iowa Corn because of our background and different specialties or passions in agriculture that we can cover all the bases.
We'll get to the ethanol in a moment. I need to go back to one more thing that you said. That new generation of producer, or how different are they? Because I'm guessing it isn't just the men. There's a whole lot of women that are coming, that are leading farms and making decisions. Is the new farmer different than what you were as a new farmer, or maybe your brothers as new farmers?
Oh, absolutely, and I respect them for that. I think the biggest difference I see. And it's not so much whether it's a male or a female being involved, because we've had a lot of great, tremendous ladies in the past be part of Iowa Corn, president of Iowa Corn, and even president of the National Corn Growers and the U.S. Grains Council that have come from Iowa over the years. But the difference I see today that the younger group has is they want a more life-work balance. I kind of did a podcast not too long ago where I shared that I just had a work balance when I started farming, and I'm really impressed with the younger generation in wanting to have that more work-life balance with their family and their jobs, and spend as much time as they can doing both. So I think that's probably one of the biggest differences I see.
Mm-hmm. Now, back to your ethanol, you have some, when you say interest, you really have interest in the industry. Are you... what's the name of the plant I believe you have some ownership in?
Yeah, I'm a director at Siouxland Energy Cooperative in Sioux Center. I was past president in 18, 19, and 20. I always jokingly say those were probably the toughest ethanol years we've had in the last 10 years because of small refinery exemptions. And then COVID came in there and the country shut down. But, you know, we got through that. I'm vice chair of the National Corn Growers Ethanol Committee. I sit on the U.S. Grains Council Ethanol Committee. I sit on the Renewable Fuels Infrastructure Program Board for the state of Iowa. This is my second term on that. And so I've been focused on the biofuels industry for quite a while. And the biggest reason to me is it was the absolute best thing that ever happened in my farming career was the biofuels industry, because we finally had markets for our corn. And I'm not a big fan of subsidies in agriculture. I'd rather have a market-driven prosperities through market-driven payments. And the ethanol industry has definitely given us one of those opportunities.
Well, it's a new place to sell and market your crop.
Yeah.
And when you have competition, usually the consumer or the seller is going to win.
Yeah. And, you know, when we started the ethanol industry, we were just looking for a market to grind corn. We didn't know really as much about the benefits of biofuels that we know today. It was kind of a work in progress that we learned as you go, learn from your mistakes. But, you know, over time, we've realized how much cleaner it is, how much better it is for the environment. And, you know, over the last 20 years, too, we've seen how much our farming practices have improved. And we're lowering our carbon indexes both at the farm level and the ethanol industry. So, you know, just the years of being involved through picking up the knowledge, just in the experiences, has been tremendous for me. And I'm going to continue, even after I'm put out to pasture, to be working for the ethanol industry and promoting this, because I truly believe there's a lot of growth potential left in the ethanol industry.
You do. Why?
Well, just, you know, all the new technologies. You know, I see the electrification crave right now. It's coming on, but it's pretty unreliable to think we're going to have one energy source take care of all of our transportation needs. I don't dispute electric cars. But we're looking today at like clear flame engines. That's a diesel styled engine that runs an E98 to put in semis, you know, even train locomotives, industries that have their own fuel terminals, you know, that could decarbonize their liquid fuels in their industry. And now we got sustainable aviation fuel, which I think is really futuristic, but it's got great potential. So, you know, between the small vehicle transportation, large vehicle transportation, and sustainable aviation fuel, we've got a bright future with biofuels.
Well, and that's what we hear, and we kind of look and read, and in listening to you speak before, I've read some of your comments very similar to that. But why do you... Okay, maybe it's a generalization I'm about to say, but there is a resistance on some of those that farm and involved with ethanol or biofuels that have a resistance to electric. Is that seen as a competition, or is that seen as just another option?
You know, I don't really try to speak out against electric vehicles. I do my best to not, because their focus are on decarbonizing our atmosphere, just like we are in the biofuels industry. I do know there's going to be a place for them. But we don't have the electric grid today to carry the load. You know, vehicles that are bought new today will probably be on the road in 17 years yet. So we're going to have the internal combustion engine for a long, long time yet. And, you know, it's very hard to electrify large vehicle transportation. You know, one of the things I learned when I was in Brazil, they're not going to plug-in electric. They realize their grid won't carry it. All their vehicles are flex fuel in Brazil. They're focusing on hybrid flex vehicles for the next step, where all their vehicles will run on E100 to charge their batteries in their small transportation vehicles. But everything in Brazil is transported on trucks. They basically don't have a rail system. Their transportation infrastructure is really bad. And, you know, even in the United States, the second largest industry we have, I do believe, is the trucking industry. And so, you know, if they're truly concerned about decarbonizing our atmosphere, we need to find substitutes for that industry for energy. And between renewable diesel, biodiesel, and ethanol, I think we can fill a big part of that void.
But, you know, when you say we're not at a certain point yet, the ethanol industry, the renewable fuel industry used to be at those small numbers, and they have grown over time. And I think there's an opportunity, and we look at the stories of what consumers are doing. And so is that go all the way back to the original thing we talked about having conversations with consumers about what some of their options are?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, now is the probably there's always been a lot of great opportunities. But in today's world with the conflicts or the war in Ukraine and Russia and, you know, the electric grid not being up to par as far as powering a lot of electrification vehicles, now is our great opportunity to even push harder and promote biofuels as a decarbonizing fuel, liquid fuel, and as also as energy independence. You know, they said if we just replaced one third of all the E10 pumps in the U.S. with E15, we could eliminate all Russian imports. And why aren't we doing it? It's homegrown, it's renewable, it's cleaner, it's better for the environment, it's better for the water quality. So we need to really push this message. And so we are doing a lot more with communications than we had in the past. And I think that'll be key moving forward.
What else do you see here as big issues in the next 1 to 2 years for the industry?
Well, really, the input costs, you know, that's been pretty much highlighted this year. And, you know, with fertilizer prices going up 400%. And, you know, we did have commodity prices raised, which, you know, I've been in this industry long enough that when we have good commodity prices, somebody usually wants a bigger piece of the pie, which, you know, I kind of had grown accustomed to. But I think they got a little too greedy this time with the fertilizer prices. And so we're responding back to them. We're having some tariffs removed on import fertilizers to hopefully open up the world market a little more. But then you also got the Ukraine-Russia war deal, and there's a lot of fertilizer that comes out of those areas. So the input costs are going to be a big part of it. Weather conditions, you know, we are kind of in a dry cycle right now. So that seems to be affecting crop production a little bit. And so there's always been issues in agriculture. I'll have to be plain and simple. It's nothing new. But with the right focus, I think we'll get through them. And we'll continue to improve our farming practices. We'll continue to improve our production, you know, just because of technology and science. And so we're pretty optimistic about the future of agriculture.
There's always something new, and I'm guessing those meetings were kind of fun to hear what was new. Was there one new thing in 8 years that kind of popped out to you? It's like, oh, what a great development.
Well, actually, there's been a few, but MEG is a new product or something that we did with our research team at Iowa Corn. It's a mouth. It's hard to pronounce. It's a new plastic made from cornstarch. Could replace plastics made by fossil fuels. And we just sold that technology and the patents to Technic Energies, which is going to continue to move forward with getting this new technology to the market. And, you know, that's a growing market. This plastic can be used for water bottles. It can be used for antifreeze or this product. It can be used for fabrics. It can be used in automobiles and their plastics. So there's a lot of demand for that. And there's potential for about 100 million bushels of corn grind per year increase as we go forward with this when this new technology gets in the position to be on the market.
So where's and that sit? Oh, go ahead.
And then Clear Flame Engines. You know, we've been involved with that. Actually, 6 years ago, it was a science project at Stanford University. And B.J. Johnson and Julie Blumreiter, they both have doctors in front of their names now. But they reached out to Iowa Corn back in 2017 for a letter of support. And I was sitting on the UP committee at the time, and I thought, that sounds awesome. You know, what better than having tractors and stuff like that that can run an E98 ethanol. So we wrote them a letter of support. And over the 6 years, they've won about every technology contest or that they've entered. And just recently, they got $17 million invested through John Deere and the Bill Gates organization. Iowa Corn's invested a little bit of money with them to help get through their testing. And I just talked to Dr. B.J. Johnson and Julie Blumreiter in Des Moines here a week or two ago, and they're excited about the new funding coming into their organization, and some of it's coming from Brazil. So, you know, we've talked about that earlier, and the technology's there with those two. There's a lot of growth potential for the corn industry.
How'd you think you did at the state fair with your steer?
I thought I did a great job.
And was that through Iowa Corn, or was that more from you're the guy in the neighborhood?
No, that was Iowa. Since I was president of the Iowa Corn Promotion Board, I got chosen as the celebrity this year, and I wanted a steer from my area. So I waited until they announced a grand champion at the O'Brien County Fair, and Courtney Decker had that steer. Lieutenant Colonel was what we named it, and it was a great Charolais steer. We had a great time raising funding for the Ronald McDonald Houses of Iowa. So it was just another opportunity, being in the position I was in, to be able to have. They probably won't let me show another steer at the Governor's Steer Show.
It's all right. I walked through the wrong barn that morning. I was kind of looking for your area, and then I got up to the line as you were walking in, and I almost yelled, but I'm like, he has a big steer on his hand. I'm not going to make him turn his head. Lieutenant Colonel, I was fine with, but yeah, no need to mess with that. But good luck, and thank you so much for the time and the insight, and good luck on the crop this fall, getting it out before anything weird happens.
Hey, thanks a lot, Paul. Enjoy these opportunities to visit with you.
If you have any feedback for me, hit me up at markettomarket@iowapbs.org, or you can just send an email to me, paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. New episodes each and every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts, or here on YouTube if you're watching me. We'll see you next time.